flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals, and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Billiken's win! Billiken's win!
Now, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
Well, pleasant good morning. Joe Pott in for Tom Ackerman here on this Sunday morning. Welcome into the Sports on a Sunday Morning, and we're happy to be joining you from our Stifel Sports Studio here today. Tom off doing some, well, he had some national college basketball last night, and a fun one he had in the Big East last night. So really cool and a nice opportunity for Tom and, you know, for those of us who do this and are into sports and have the opportunity to do the live play-by-play. That is such a fun thing to be involved with. And I do a lot of play-by-play, so I know that Tom really enjoys that as well, and a good opportunity for him to get out there on the national level as well. So I will sit in for him today, and glad you all are with us as well. Our producer, Drew Young, is here with us today. You can join us here, of course, on KMOX 1120 and 98.7 FM, but also in the usual spots, KMOX Sports on Facebook, on YouTube. Please feel free to throw a comment in there, and if I see them, I'll get to those, and I'll be able to respond to those as well. So a lot to do on this Sunday morning. It's Championship Sunday in the NFL, of course, as the NFC Championship has Washington and Philadelphia coming up today. That's a 2 o'clock start. And then at 5:30, and of course you can hear that here, 5:30, the AFC Championship as the Kansas City Chiefs get set to try to get back to the Super Bowl, and they take on Scott Jagow's Buffalo Bills coming up at 5:30. So we'll talk a little bit of NFL today. We'll talk with Jay Binky. He is the post-game host for the Chiefs on 96.5 The Fan. He's also got a podcast, Jay Binkley, I should say, and talk some NFL there. But, of course, focus a lot about that AFC Championship game coming up at 5:30 here this evening. In our first segment, I guess our second segment, coming up after the break, we'll talk to Kevin Wheeler. Wheels will talk to us about the top 100 prospects. Both Baseball America and MLB Pipeline have come out with their top 100 prospects. No surprises as far as the Cardinals are concerned, with several prospects included on that top 100 list. But we'll chat with him about that. Josh Schertz will join us for his weekly spot. That comes up at 10:30 this morning. The Billikens took one on the chin yesterday, and really it was kind of the tale of two halves for the Bills yesterday. They just did not have a very good first half and dug themselves a little bit of a hole. Really nice effort in the second half. Almost came back in that one, but couldn't quite do it. They fall yesterday to GW up in Washington, D.C. So we'll chat with the Billikens head coach. We've got Blues chairman Tom Stillman coming up. They just put their third class into the Hall of Fame, the Blues Hall of Fame, which from all accounts, and I've not been to one of the Blues Hall of Fame ceremonies, but it's just a tremendous evening from what I can tell. I caught a little bit of their stream on YouTube, and I'm pretty sure it'll come up on FanDuel. I think they usually have it one night coming up on FanDuel, but such a really really cool event, and obviously, I think that the obviously we talk so much about the Cardinals and what they do for their alumni, and how much they keep those alum involved in the team and in the organization. And the Blues have done such a good job of doing that. You can even talk about the St. Louis Football Cardinals that still have a very active alumni chapter here in St. Louis in keeping those folks involved. And, of course, it speaks to the city and then those organizations as well, that these players want to be involved, they want to stay around. And so that's just another way to honor those folks and those players and those people that have impacted the organization and have come in previous generations. And so we'll talk to the Blues chairman about that. And, of course, Bernie Miklas will join us at the end of the show. Coming up, we'll wrap up the 11 o'clock hour. We'll talk to the big dog about a variety of topics. I want to get into a little bit. I think that it's interesting as we watch the success that Mizzou has had under third-year head coach. This is Mizzou basketball under third-year head coach Dennis Gates. If you've ever had any interaction with Coach Gates, he is about as even-keeled as of a coach as I think is out there. And I think, especially in this day and age, when you can pick out the coaches that are, you know, really demonstrative on the sideline or want to get in their press conference and either call out players or conferences or other coaches or referees, whatever the case is, and that's not Dennis Gates. And I think that even keel has put Mizzou on a really good path. We saw a tough year last year, really good year in his first year. We knew it was going to be a little bit of a downturn last year, so a really, I think, tougher than we expected, and now they are right back on the path, and they look like a certain contender for the NCAA tournament come March, and they have been a tough out in the SEC, and already some top five wins on their resume. Yesterday, they get another top 25 win against Ole Miss at Mizzou Arena. They're 15-0 at Mizzou Arena. So they are rolling, and I kind of want to get Bernie's opinion on that. So we'll do that coming up at the end of the 11 o'clock hour. We'll take our first break now. When we come back, Kevin Wheeler's going to join us, and we'll talk some baseball. The top 100 prospects are out. This is where Wheels shine. So we'll talk to him coming up right after the break. It's the Graybar Sports on a Sunday morning from the Stiefel Sports Studio. I'm Joe Pott, in for Tom Ackerman. We're coming right back. It's Joe Pott on this Sunday. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line here on Camo X. Glad you are along. And we have, as I said, lots to do. Pretty full program here on this Sunday morning. And we'll keep things going right now as we join, as we welcome Kevin Wheeler. Of course, you hear him on the DGS each weekday and on the Gas House Gang in the noon hour on Camo X Sports and all the socials. Wheels, what's happening, man?
How much, Joe? How you doing, man?
I am doing well. Were you surprised? You sounded surprised.
Well, no. You want me to let you into the world that I'm in the moment?
Let me into the world, yes.
All right, so I'm sitting in the office getting ready to talk to you and talk some baseball, and I got my little protein shake in the morning, and I have that with a banana, and then I didn't realize that I had the protein shake open. I went to shake it again, I shook it all over the room.
Happy Sunday morning.
I was in the middle of wiping stuff up off the desk, and thankfully it did not hit the computer or my little bit of broadcast equipment here, so nothing but cosmetic damage, but still kind of stupid.
Well, thanks for taking some time this morning. Both Baseball America and MLB Pipeline have come out with their most recent top 100 prospects list, which I said going to the break. This is where Wheels shines. I know this is really what you enjoy digging into, and I think probably more than anybody else here in the local area, you really enjoy digging into those prospects. And I think whenever we're looking to get some info on that, like, you're the go-to guy around here because you're usually following those folks that a lot of people aren't. And I think that's great because that's what I know a lot of people are interested. They want to hear about what is next, right? What's coming up. So for the Cardinals specifically, three prospects appearing on the top 100 in varying spots in the two lists, but very close. And the top of that, probably no surprises, J.J. Weatherholt.
Yeah, this is you're right, Joe. This is something I do, even just separate from work, that I just love doing. I've been covering prospects since I was in college. And it started when I was a college player, and I was following my teammates or guys that we played against. And then it just kind of grew from there. And for a while, I was the minor league expert for the Sporting News. So got a chance to do a lot of that stuff for real. And then I've just been doing it kind of like as a side hustle and fun and it helps with Cardinals coverage too. And I look at these guys, Joe, and look, when you're a consensus top 100 type guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you take J.J. Weatherholt, Tink Hentz, Quinn Matthews. Those guys are in everybody's top 100. It's not one group. It's four or five different, as like some people like to call them, the third-party evaluators, right? They're not the same as team evaluators, and teams will all have different grades, values, assessments of each of these players. So some might like Quinn Matthews more. Others might like Weatherholt. But these are three guys that the baseball world is really high on, and I'm particularly high on Weatherholt. You know, I watch a good bit of college baseball in addition to following the Major League Baseball draft process, you know, in the lead up, the reading the evaluations and all that. And he's just a hitter, man. You know, he's not huge. He's not, you know, a 6'3", 225-pound guy like Bryce Harper was as a minor league player, as a prospect. But he's big enough, right? He's the same size as guys like Chase Utley. He's bigger than a lot of the other dudes that are up there already putting up good numbers. And he just flat out rakes, man. He knows what he's doing at the plate. In addition to having a nice swing and good bat speed and all that stuff, he just knows how to take an at bat. And when you look at what he did last year, just out of college, he came in and played about 30 games at Palm Beach, which is a terrible hitters league, by the way. The Florida State League is one of the is the worst hitters league in the minors. It's big ballparks because they're big enough for all the teams that use them for spring training, right? The major league teams. So it's big ballparks, no elevation. Having played college at Miami, Joe, yeah. I can tell you the ball doesn't travel when you're at or below sea level. You don't get that little extra boost. And he jumped right in there, straight out of college. And by the way, straight out of a college year where he missed a lot of time with a hamstring injury. So he didn't have a full college season ramp up. And he jumped right in and hit almost 300, hit for some power, walked more than he struck out, drove in 20 runs in 29 games. I mean, like, this guy can flat out hit. He's going to come fast. The only question about him is, you know, he's a shortstop now. They list him as that. That's what he was at West Virginia when he was in college. He's not going to be that for the Cardinals. That's Mason Wynn's job, and it's going to be Mason Wynn's job for a long time. But he wasn't really projected to stay there necessarily. But he can play second base, which he's done. You could play him at third base, and you could also teach him to play some outfield because he runs well. The only thing that's not really great about him is he's not a big arm. Not, you know, he doesn't have a great throwing arm. It's probably average-ish for a major leaguer. So it's still good enough, but it's not necessarily elite. But he can flat-out hit, Joe, and he's going to be coming up quick. I'm guessing they'll start him at Peoria, unless he's just amazing in spring training. But he'll finish the year either at Springfield or Memphis, I would think. And, you know, next year this time we'll be talking about him possibly being on the team, although it could happen this year, I would guess.
So that's where I was going to go, because you and I have chatted about this in other situations, because the college player, that's changing if a guy is playing their full, sometimes 5 years in college, right? And it's the opportunity. Some of them have a better opportunity to stick around and get some NIL money. And so you're getting an older player if they have gone through their entire college eligibility. But as you mentioned, he's also already played so well at the Florida State League that he really could make a very quick ascension, couldn't he?
I don't think he could. I think he will. You know, when you look at the highest level of college baseball, it's a little different. But when you're looking at the top tier, SEC, ACC, Big 12, Big 10, what used to be called the Pac-12, like those teams out west, you know, the top tier of college baseball is really good. I mean, that's A-ball. You know, that to me, the best of the best, when it's good on good, you're basically two high A teams. And, you know, this is a guy that has hit 450 in college. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't have any trouble with it. And I think he's going to be a guy that doesn't spend much more time, if any, at A-ball. It might be just to start the year. And then you're just a phone call away, man. Once you're at Double-A, you're a phone call away. And because he can just flat-out hit. And the power is not in doubt. It's just a question of how much it is. Is he a 15, 18-homer guy? Is he 20 to 25? I kind of like that low 20s as the range because he hits the ball so consistently hard. You know, I talked about it, Joe. I think, you know, comps are difficult because they're not always fair to a player, because what you're trying to do is give you a name that kind of reminds you of the player, as opposed to this guy's going to be this player. But I'd say your low end it's another Brendan Donovan. That's your low end. That's your worst case scenario. And I think your best case scenario is it might be a guy like Chase Utley, who hits 20, 25 home runs, hits 300, and is just a quality middle of the order guy.
So let's talk about Quinn Matthews, the next guy on that list. Tink Hens, as you mentioned, is also on the list. We've talked a lot about him, a little bit of a slower rise. Quinn Matthews, exactly the opposite, ripping through the minors last year, appearing at every single level, and then obviously the Cards minor league pitcher of the year. Do we see Quinn Matthews this year?
Yeah, I think so. I'd be shocked if he's not. And Baseball America rated him the best pitcher in the minor leagues last year. He was the minor league pitcher of the year, according to Baseball America. He's an interesting guy, right? He's not a low draft pick. He's not a Cinderella story out of nowhere. I mean, a fourth round pick is a pretty high pick in baseball. It's not unusual for fourth round picks to be quality players. And coming out of Stanford, he's not a kid. No, he's 24 now. He just turned 24 after the season. So this will be his age 24 season. But you don't want to waste too much time.
Right.
You know, you don't want this guy debuting when he's 26. You'd love to get this guy to the big leagues as soon as possible because he's shown that he's capable. I mean, this guy played at four levels last year. He did struggle at Memphis a little bit. But keeping in mind that it was the very end of the year, he had never pitched that long before, right? This was his first professional season, and you know, he made 26 starts, and he'd never really gone that long. In college, you don't have that kind of a workload. So it's hard to know whether that was because it was Memphis, because it was AAA and it's older, better hitters, or if it's just a little fatigue, probably a little bit of both. But a dude that strikes out 200 guys in 140 innings has got to be interesting, especially because he's not a flamethrower. He's not a 100-mile-an-hour lefty, right? He can get it up there. Like, he'll get up there 96, 97 at times, which is something he didn't do in college. He pitched lower than that in college, which is why he was drafted where he was. Because if you look at him outside of that, he's got four pitches that he can use. He's got a great changeup, which is probably where he gets most of his strikeouts against minor league hitters that can't read it out of the hand. His fastball's good, and the fastball's getting better as he's getting stronger. So he's listed, Joe, like coming out of college at like 6'5", 185. Which is really skinny for 6'5", but he's been gaining weight, and as he's gaining weight and getting stronger, he's throwing harder. So, you know, he's an interesting guy that he's advanced, but he's also made some jumps in velocity because of strength and conditioning and just, you know, learning how to eat, I guess. So he's interesting, and to me it would be a flat-out shock if he's not in the big leagues at some point this year.
And
he'll start at Memphis. There's no point in going below that right for him. And if he's pitching well and they have a need, he'll be up.
And especially that's what I was going to say. You know, if we're to believe that the Cardinals need to move Nolan Arenado, and they so far have not moved Nolan Arenado, and so they are, at least as John Mozeliak tells us, perhaps kind of stuck as far as other moves, they could use, they're going to be needing to plug some holes in the pitching staff. There's a lot of good pieces back, but there's opportunity there.
Yeah, I really think it would be a waste of a year if we don't see several of these young starters like Quinn Matthews. And look, with Matthews, I think they're super high on him. They're going to be aggressive. When he's ready, they'll make space for him. I would hope that the same is going to be true for Michael McGreevy.
Right.
He's not going to make any top 100 lists, but you know, he threw 27, he made 27 starts at Memphis last year and got better as the year went, right? A little rough early, but got better as the year went. And he's not as big a strikeout guy. He's definitely more of the, you know, pitch to contact, get ground balls. He strikes people out all right, but I mean, it's not probably not going to be great in the big leagues. But then he had that audition here and you could see it. You know, he's very gifted. I don't think he's what he showed us in those games where I think he posted a sub 2 ERA with the Cardinals. He's not that guy. But he's a 24-year-old as well. Like Gordon Graceffo's 24. Like, these are three guys that you're probably going to need to see this year and probably see a good bit of, so you have an idea of what you're going to be starting 2026 with. If two of those guys can take rotation spots for 2026, that's a lot of money you don't have to spend on bulk. And maybe you spend it on high-end something, or you spend it somewhere else where you think you're going to need it.
Real quick on McGreevy, the thing that impressed me most was exactly as you said, he made the full season of starts at Memphis. Couple that with the three starts he made in St. Louis at the end of the year. This is a guy that has given you already a full season. You worry less about the fact that he might not be able to take a full season.
Nah, he threw 173 innings last year. he's good to go.
Right.
You know, that's a guy that can stop. And you know, Quinn Matthews threw 140 innings last year. Both of those guys are probably pretty good to go. You know, if you want them to throw 170, 180 innings, it'll be performance related if they don't, and not physical, right? It won't be protecting. And then that leaves us with Hintz, you know, and he's another guy. You brought him up already. He's one of these guys that's consensus top 100. He's got electric stuff, better stuff than Quinn Matthews, better stuff than McGreevy that we talked about. But he's just not really been able to pitch for a full season, right? I mean, his career high, he was drafted in 2020, so obviously one of the worst years you could be drafted. So he didn't get to pitch professionally that year. He only threw 8 innings in 2021, and then it was 52, 96, and 79. For a starting pitcher, you know, 80, 90 innings is not a lot, and it's not even close to the workload. You know, he only averaged about 4 innings per start last year and only made 20 starts because of some minor injuries. You know, the question with Tink is basically, when can you get him built up? Because he throws mid to upper 90s when he wants it. He's got one of those Bugs Bunny changeups that gets a lot of swing and miss too. When you throw hard with a good changeup, you're in a great spot. So like he's got the physical ability to get big leaguers out. Now the question is, when's he ready to be able to start every fifth day and give you 5 or 6 innings every time out? And that's kind of what we're going to start finding out, I would think, early this year. But I love this guy, and there have been some people that think, Joe, that he may end up being a reliever. He's not real big, you know, he's 6'1", 190 pounds, you know, people always kind of give questions to short right-handers, but if he goes to the pen, that could be your next closer, that could be your next guy that, you know, sits at 97, 98 and just blows people away. So I don't know that they want that, I certainly don't think I want that, but if it goes that way, then man, he could be a weapon.
Wheels, great stuff as always. Appreciate you taking some time this morning to chat about it. It's always fun to chat baseball with you, and get that studio cleaned up, man.
I'm almost there, man. I was almost there when you guys went to me, and that was why I sounded weird, and now I got to go finish cleaning up my mess.
Well, I appreciate it. Good to hear from you, as always. That's Kevin Wheeler with us here talking some baseball. We got to keep things moving here. The Billikens head coach, Josh Schertz, coming up on the other side of the break. It's the Gray Bar Sports on a Sunday morning from the Stiefel Sports Studio. I'm Joe Pott, in for Tom Ackerman. We're coming back on KMOX.
He hits a slammer!
Gray Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Billikens win! Billikens win!
Once again, from the Stiefel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
Back in the Gray Bar Sports on a Sunday morning, and Joe Pott in for Tom Ackerman this week as we keep things going. Time to visit with the head coach of the St. Louis University Billikens. He is Josh Schertz, and this, of course, is sponsored by Royal Banks of Missouri. Coach, thanks for some time this morning.
Appreciate it. Yum, yum.
Absolutely. What turned out to be a close game and obviously a tough loss yesterday at GW feels like, just as I was watching a little bit of it, that it was a case of kind of digging a hole too much to get out of. Is that fair?
Yeah, I thought certainly, you know, rough day yesterday. Didn't have our fastball in the first half on either end of the floor, obviously. You know, got down 14 at half. I think we got down 16 there in the second half. And, you know, big hole to climb out of. And, you know, credit to I thought GW, you know, they were the more physical, more energetic team, and came out. You know, we knew we were playing a team that was a good basketball team, that was a desperate team on their home court, and a certain level of intensity and focus and competitiveness you got to have. We didn't have it, and then I thought we showed some resilience there, you know, down 16 on the road. Easy to go away, and we did battle back and had a shot there to tie it in the final 15 seconds, and got a really good look, didn't go in, but you know, that's we put ourselves in a big hole, worked our way back, but you know, disappointing day for us on a lot of levels.
Yeah, as you mentioned, fight back in the second half. This is what it sounded like. Bob Ramsey, as the Billikens just about got themselves back in this one in the second half.
What's the drive in the paint? Kick to Robbie. Oh, nice closeout. Robbie didn't want to pull the trigger. Jimerson will. Bang!
There you go.
Gibson Jimerson. One possession game, 38 seconds left.
Hey, you can play defense.
That one capped off an 8-0 run for the Bills there in the second half. Gibson Jimerson, man, he has given this program some big shots over the years.
Yeah, obviously, you know, a historical player in St. Louis basketball history. He'll set some records here as he leaves that will be hard for anybody to approach in the modern game. And he's done it through, you know, certainly, you know, one incredible work. He's a great worker. He's just as dependable as they come, as consistent as they come, and great loyalty. I think, you know, that shouldn't be overlooked in the modern era of you know, being committed to school and staying at St. Louis for 6 years. And you know, he certainly, you know, has been great for us in his transition year. You know, and as we come in and kind of take over his, you know, his decision to stay and then what he's meant, you know, in terms of helping lay a foundation for, you know, what we want to be and the blueprint for what this program needs to look like moving forward has been really significant, for forever appreciative of him.
You mentioned it, Coach, that in this day and age when it seems like if the slightest thing goes wrong, you know, that I think the first instinct, it seems like or feels like that the player wants to leave, and that's not been the case for Gibson Jimerson. It obviously speaks volumes of the university and of the program at St. Louis University, but it should be a testament to you and your incoming staff that you know, what he felt like and the trust that he felt in your staff coming in.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of factors with Gibb. I mean, you know, one is, you know, just who he is. I mean, he's such a high character individual. And as you said, he's not had it, you know, always easy here. And, you know, but I think he was really, you know, he loves the school. He loves the city. I think he really enjoyed his experience, you know, with the previous staff. And when we got here, you know, Gibb's a really, really smart guy. He's obviously, you know, multiple-time academic All-American. He's somebody that is really thoughtful. I think he looks at things from a lot of angles. And, you know, when I got here, he'd already studied, you know, Indiana State, the system, how we play, and then how he could potentially fit into that system, which we thought was a really nice marriage for his skill set, what he can do without the ball, with the ball, and then really, you know, for the way we want to play and who he was as a person, you know, the cultural fit, the basketball fit. We felt like it was, you know, it was really, really good. And, you know, and it has been. It's not been, you know, he's obviously hit a little bit of a rough patch here, but, you know, that's part of every season for every player. It doesn't matter if you're Steph Curry or, you know, whomever. You're not going to, you know, shooting is a fickle beast. But Gibbs had a terrific year and been a great, just a great fit and a great ambassador for St. Louis University itself and certainly the basketball program. And, again, his numbers, what he does, you know, what he's done here, he'll be at the top of the record books in St. Louis basketball for a very long time to come in a wide variety of areas.
Billikens head coach Josh Schertz with us here on Sports on a Sunday morning. Bills are 5-2 in the A-10, right near the top of the league. And, Coach, it doesn't matter what league you're in. It doesn't matter if it's a high major, a mid-major, a low major. I don't care. Conference basketball is conference basketball. It can sometimes be the difference in seeding when you're talking about conference tournament, getting one of those wins. And you've got a stretch coming up here where you've got VCU coming to town on Tuesday. They're 6-1. Dayton on Friday, who has made a nice push after a tough start. They're 4-3. And then you go to UMass, who's right behind the Bills at 4-3. This is an important stretch coming up for the Bills, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, this window, we talked about it, you know, coming out of LaSalle, the seven games, you know, before we get the next bye, and how difficult that stretch was going to be. And, you know, we kind of reference it as, you know, this is kind of the dog days, you know, post LaSalle. It feels like we've been going forever, and it feels like the season's forever from ending, you know, and we've been going since June, and it feels like, you know, it's cold, it's dreary, it's gray, and this is every team. And so, you know, the longest part of any, you know, book, any movie, any story is the middle. You know, and everybody remembers the beginning, everybody remembers the end, but the longest part's the middle. And this middle part, these dog days, that seven-game stretch, which started yesterday at GW, continues home against VCU and Dayton, goes to UMass, goes to St. Joe's, comes back against George Mason, then goes to Loyola. You know, those are seven brutally difficult games. And, you know, this middle stretch is going to dictate, you know, what we're playing for there at the end. And so, you know, we've got to have the mental toughness to be able to dig in. Everybody's tired. Everybody's been going for a while. We're not unique in all that. And, you know, our guys got to have the, you know, the mental wherewithal to kind of persevere. And we're going to have to beat some really good teams here these next few weeks to be in the mix. So, you know, we know that it gets, you know, we play VCU, who, you know, I haven't seen everybody in the league, but the best team we've played this season, non-conference or conference. we get them coming in, you know, on Tuesday night. And then, you know, Dayton, like you said, who's playing as well as anybody in the league there after a tough start. So, you know, arguably the two best teams in the league coming into Chaffetz this week, and going to need our team to have high energy and hopefully great crowds at Chaffetz, because we're going to need to feed off the energy of these of our crowd.
Yeah, you mentioned it. Those are great games that I think folks enjoy seeing. And that's oftentimes the key, right? When you've got that home crowd behind you, it makes a big difference.
Absolutely. You know, particularly when you're, you know, when you're tired, when you're fatigued, if you got the crowd in there, they're bringing the energy, the players feed off that. Those are going to be two absolute battles, against, you know, high quality teams. And we're going to need everything from our players, but we need everything from our fans as well. And that's, you know, part of what makes, like you said, the home court, you know, advantage is, you know, obviously you got to have great players, but certainly the corollary to that is you got to have great energy in the building. Your fans got to bring that juice, and, you know, our students to the community. You know, you're not going to get better home games than VCU Dayton back-to-back. So should be a huge week, and I hope our fans come out and support. We've played well at home. I think we're 10-1 in Chaffetz this year, but certainly these two tests are going to be as two of good of games as we'll have, and then the next one, of course, with George Mason, is also at the top of the league. So it's about to get really good inside of Chaffetz here these next few weeks.
It's definitely a fun time of year. Billiken's head coach Josh Schertz, thanks for some time here on this Sunday afternoon. Bills home on January 28th. That's Tuesday night, 7 o'clock, VCU at Chaffetz Arena. Get out there, see the Billiken's. Thanks, coach. Appreciate the time as always.
Absolutely. Appreciate you having me on. We'll see you hopefully on Tuesday night.
You got it. That is Josh Schertz, the head coach of the St. Louis University Billikens. Again, VCU on Tuesday night. VCU 6-1, top of the league in the A-10. The Billikens just a game behind at 5-2. More to come on this Graybar Sports on a Sunday morning from the Stiefel Sports Studio. Blues chairman Tom Stillman is up next. We'll be right back on Camo X. We're back in on the Graybar Sports open line. And, I should say sports on a Sunday morning. See, I knew I was going to do that. I've done that a couple of times. Sports on a Sunday morning, of course, today, as the Blues have inducted their 2025 Hall of Fame class. They did that just last week. And we're scheduled to be joined by the Blues chairman and CEO. That would be Tom Stillman, of course. So we'll connect with him here as soon as we can and chat with him a little bit about the Blues Hall of Fame. Actually, a lot about the Blues Hall of Fame, because I mentioned it before that I think that the organizations in town do such a good job as far as honoring those folks that have laid the groundwork, have come before. You've seen it, obviously, for several years now with the Cardinals Hall of Fame, the so-called Red Jacket Hall of Famers. Now you've got the Blue Jacket Hall of Famers as far as the Blues go, and an impressive list, obviously, of folks already in the Blues Hall of Fame. Their first class, which always is going to be a huge class, right, as you start to establish the Hall of Fame. That, to me, I think that would be the toughest, is to figure out who deserves or who belongs in that first class when you're putting together a Hall of Fame, when you haven't had a Hall of Fame previously, and you have to go back and decide who are the representatives that get to be in that inaugural class. And of course, when you look at that inaugural class of the Blues Hall of Fame, which was 2023, and you see names like Glenn Hall, of course, Dan Kelly, the broadcaster, the Solomons, former owners of the Blues, Barkley Plager, Brian Sutter, Bob Plager, Gary Unger, Federko, Berenson, Scotty Bowman, all of these players. You've got to decide who's going to make up that initial class. And then I think it gets a little bit easier as far as when you're determining what makes you a Blues Hall of Famer. So this past Friday, they had the induction of the Hall of Fame class at the Missouri Athletic Club. Wayne Babich, Jim Roberts, Curtis Joseph all go into the Blues Hall of Fame in this third class of the Hall of Fame. Bruce Aflack essentially inducted, as he was given the True Blue Award, someone near and dear, obviously, to the Blues organization, and somebody that served the organization from in so many different roles, including for a long time as one of their broadcasters, Bruce Aflack. But the other point that stands out, or the other kind of thing that stands out to me, is if you saw the Blues game last night, Jordan Binnington came out in a Curtis Joseph mask. He was wearing the old, like the Cujo mask, and Cujo had the actual like Cujo that dog from the Stephen King movie, right? That was what his mask had, was this open, gaping mouth, essentially of a rabid dog on his mask. So Jordan Binnington came out in warm-ups last night wearing the Curtis Joseph mask. And if that doesn't give you some idea of what Curtis Joseph meant to the St. Louis Blues, the organization, the city, and of course, obviously, to Jordan Binnington, I think that speaks a lot about the impact that someone like that had. And the Blues chairman and CEO Tom Stillman does join us now. And Tom, thanks so much for some time this Sunday morning. The class of 2025 inducted on Friday, another great class here in the Blues Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it was it's a great class, and it was a great evening of, you know, the induction ceremony and then the puck drop and all of the game last night. It's kind of an important tradition for the franchise and honoring our past and some of our stars and big contributors.
I don't know a lot of chairman, CEO that would be the MC of this, but I know this is something that is personal to you, and I think that sort of highlights what it means to have a local ownership group of a franchise, as you and your group are, of the Blues. This is a personal endeavor of yours, isn't it?
Well, it's really an all organization effort. It's kind of come up through the ranks, you know, in a process of 10 years. And I might quibble with being the MC. I made some introductory remarks, and then Kerber and Kelly really take it over. But we want to make clear that this is a priority, you know, from top to bottom of the franchise, and honoring our past, honoring our alumni, and making sure that, you know, we commemorate their contributions to the franchise and to the city.
I was just comparing at the top of the show, and then again at the top of this segment, the Blues Hall of Fame, of course, in relative terms, very young compared to like the Cardinals Hall of Fame. But you can even look at the St. Louis Football Cardinals, who still have an active alumni base in the St. Louis area. But there really is something special about this city and about these organizations, because I think you do such a good job of paying homage to those folks that, whether they laid the groundwork or they succeeded in the past, and they all still seem to have such a connection to St. Louis. And I know that's the case with this class. I saw an interview where Wayne Babbage was talking about everything is still St. Louis in his house.
Yeah. You know, I the organization focus on that, but I think it also speaks volumes about St. Louis and its people. Fans here just show tremendous respect for, you know, the athletes that have performed and, you know, provided so much entertainment and kind of cohesion. And they've, you know, I know our alumni just go on and on about how well they're treated here, and they compare it to other cities, and it's just, you know, just a great place to play because of the people.
The three that went in, as I mentioned, it's Wayne Babbage, Jim Roberts, Curtis Joseph. Bruce Affleck gets the True Blue Award. I was also just kind of chatting about the fact that Jordan Binnington comes out last night in the pregame warmups wearing the Cujo-style mask. And again, it says a lot about what the past means to even the players that are currently wearing the blue note.
Yeah, and boy, I guess I assume you were at the ceremony on Friday night when Kelly went into the crowd to talk to Jordan Binnington. And Binnington had, you know, he had obviously put, you know, a good deal of thought into what he wanted to say about Curtis Joseph. And he talked about how he had, you know, idolized him since he was a young boy, and how he had, you know, ran into him several times and got his autograph as a kid. And, you know, he formed a strong impression about not only his talent as a goalie, but the quality of his character, because he was always so open and kind to the kid, to Jordan and other kids. So that was a really nice moment.
And as I mentioned, Bruce Affleck gets the True Blue Award. I know that Bruce Affleck is a personal friend of yours, but this is a guy that has served the St. Louis Blues organization in so many different roles. One of the big pieces of keeping that alumni group strong and together and connected.
he's really been the glue that has held that group together and made it such a large group and, you know, ensured that they have an impact well beyond, you know, just the organization. They're helping all sorts of causes, some hockey related, some not. They're always willing to jump in on you know, anything that arises. And I mean, Bruce is just a thoroughly good person through and through. You couldn't find a finer person.
Tom Stillman, the Blues chairman and CEO, with us as we chat about the Blues Hall of Fame and the Blues current season. Let's talk just briefly about the current season, 23-23-4. It feels to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the word might be like patience, right? As Jim Montgomery continues to kind of put his stamp on this team and get this team where he wants it, do you feel like that's the case, that this is a much longer term project than just a couple of months since he's taken over?
Well, yeah, I mean, we are in a process, you know, that we've talked about of retooling, and you know, this season is one of the important steps along the way. And so, yeah, we have to be patient to a degree to, you know, develop the team, develop the culture, develop our young players. That doesn't mean you don't have moments of impatience sometimes in certain periods. But yeah, it is part of the process of bringing along players, bringing along our culture. You know, we've brought in a really top-notch coach, and you know, give him time to do his work. So it's a process of overall patience, realizing that there are days when you're not always feeling that way.
Tom Stillman, thanks so much for taking some time on this Sunday morning. The Blues Hall of Fame class went in on Friday. It's great to chat about that and about the team, and I certainly will have a chance to catch up again down the road.
Yes, that'd be great. Thank you very much.
Tom Stillman with us here on the Gray Bar Sports on a Sunday morning, chairman and CEO of the St. Louis Blues, as the Hall of Fame class of 2025 is inducted now into the Blues Hall of Fame. 11 o'clock hour, we've got plenty more to do. We'll talk about the NFL championship games. We'll visit with Bernie Mikulas. So there's plenty more to come here on this Sports on a Sunday program from the Stiefel Sports Studio. Joe Pott sitting in for Tom Ackerman this week. Glad you're along with us again. Comment, reach out to us, Facebook, YouTube, KMOX Sports. You can find us at all of those spots. And, of course, on KMOX on 1120 and 98.7 FM. We're coming back after the news. Hour number two of Sports on a Sunday Morning is straight ahead.